Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey, it's Mozzie here. I don't have much experience when it comes to rallying, but Waukesha Racing Services does. And they're available now for your rally needs. They can help you with engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication. No job is too big or too small. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop, and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. And you don't need to be an Aussie champion or factory back to be able to. From club to state to national level competitors and car owners, let Waukesha Racing Services help you with your rally needs. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services at waukeshawracing.com.au.
Hello, my name is Luke Whitten. Welcome to Rally Sport Magazine's Special Stage Podcast. It's one of the biggest weeks and busiest weeks of the rally year, it seems. Peter Whitten, it's nice to have you with me from a rainy and perhaps overcast Dunedin.
Well, funny you should say that, Luke. The sun is out at the moment. I'm sitting in a subway between the morning and the afternoon testing runs at the Otago rallies. But things are going well, but it's certainly going to be rainy over the next couple of days.
Thanks for explaining the audio difficulties. If there's a dropout or something throughout, that's the reason why. It's all over the country, all over the world in some ways. We're in our little part of the world, we could say. Last weekend was the Rally of Canberra. It was such a big event and such a big build-up, Peter. And for the cancellation to occur on the Saturday was very disappointing. It's such a hard call to make in those situations and in those circumstances, whether to run or whether not to run. We've spoken to Chris Atkinson, who's the ARC competition checker, and we've also spoken to the event organisers as to why that happened. Do you have thoughts, Peter, on whether it should have run, shouldn't have run? It was very wet, that's for sure.
It certainly was very wet, Luke, and I guess from our side of things, it's not our position to decide whether the rally should run or not when there's inclement weather like that. And certainly from a media side of things and from a competition side of things, we always want the rally to go ahead. But we've got to look at these things from the organisational point of view as well. And when you're dealing with forestry and everybody else who's involved in the running of a rally, it's not an easy decision, and certainly not as simple a decision as it might seem like from the outside.
Yeah, when Chris Atkinson went out, who's clearly the competition checker of the championship, he concluded that the roads were okay for use from a competition perspective, that they could be used and drivers could get through the rally safely. But there are other things to consider. And once the article appears on our website from the event organisers, they've explained their side of things as to what they considered over a long period of time. And yeah, we know it's a hard decision and everything like that. Everybody wants to go rallying, but people are there to make decisions and make the decision they did.
That's right, and certainly it's easy to come up with a decision for one event, and that might have been to run the rally on the Saturday, but the organising team, they need to think of future years as well, and whether they go out there on the Saturday and the roads get destroyed because of the conditions that are prevalent on that day, that then might put the rally in jeopardy in usage of stages for future years. So they're the things that need to be considered by organising teams, and really, as we said, it's not as simple as just saying, yeah, the sun has come out, let's go out there and rally.
Mm. Harry Bates' dominance of the rally was so clear. It was just remarkable the way he was able to get to grips with that car so quickly and the conditions so quickly. That car is, if it's not the best Rally 2 car in the world, it's the second best Rally 2 car in the world. Toyota, particularly on a global stage, and even here in Australia, don't do things by halves. That car was so fast, and Harry got to grips with it very, very quickly in the wet conditions. He didn't get the first split point right. He had a half spin on that first stage in some of the trickiest conditions we've seen, but winning every stage, he was fastest on most of the splits. Do you have a thought on him and his weekend with Coral Taylor? It was just a sublime performance.
Oh, it was the perfect weekend for Harry, definitely. And I must say that I was quite surprised that it was so fast in that car, given that it was the first event in that car and the wet conditions that were even still prevalent on the Sunday morning. I wasn't quite sure whether he would be on the pace of some of the other guys, and particularly the Skodas, but yeah, he went out there right from the get-go and was clearly faster than anybody else. And certainly he's put down the gauntlet, and it's going to be tough for other people to catch him throughout the year.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. We know he's a talented driver and a really, really skillful driver. He's a multiple Australian rally champion, and I think he's the fastest guy in the field. Absolutely. The car would have made a difference, you would have to say, the AP4 versus the Rally 2 car. How much of a difference, Peter, do you think that might have made? You spoke to Harry afterwards, and he was very happy he was in the Rally 2, not the AP4.
Yeah, to be fair to Harry, I mean, he was quite open with his comments after the event, and he did say that on the morning loop of three stages on Sunday morning, he said being car one on the road was probably an advantage because it was quite wet and slippery. And the conditions did deteriorate, but later in the day, the weather did dry up a bit and the sun came out. So, and as we know, there was even dust on some of the stages. But Harry did say that, and certainly he wasn't being boastful, but he did say that he thought he would have been probably winning the rally even in the AP4 car. And that was simply based on the fact that he was car one on the road and that many of the other drivers had problems, whether that be punctures or other setup issues. And he said, nobody else really put the complete day together, including his brother Lewis.
Lewis did struggle a little bit. He wasn't on the pace on the first stage and just didn't really challenge Harry, as was the older brother's dominance. Is there much to read into Lewis's pace on the weekend? It was tricky conditions. We know Lewis has less experience than his brother. But do you read anything into it, Peter? Do you think that's a trend that we'll see over the season?
It's hard to know, Luke. Certainly, Lewis, it was a great performance. I mean, he finished second. He bagged plenty of championship points for the year. And I guess you've got to start the year with a good bunch of points. And even other guys in the field who had issues, such as Eddie McGuire and Scott Pettit, who had issues with punctures, they still managed to get good points. And you've only got to have one bad heat or one bad event throughout the season. And that could really throw you a championship challenge in jeopardy. So I think Lewis would be happy, yeah. And he wasn't as fast as Harry, clearly, but I think he's got a bigger plan that he just needs to get through these first couple of events until he gets the Rally 2 car for the Rally of Queensland in May.
Eddie McGuire, you mentioned his name. He struggled throughout the day, setup issues, punctures. He had a very big overshoot. If you're on social media, check out the McGuire Motorsport page. You'll see that overshoot in the video. It was very, very lucky. For Eddie, it was disappointing because he said some fighting words before the rally that he was out for the championship. He was going to be out there stage one going as fast as he can. Those issues pegged him back a little bit and he just never really got into it, I wouldn't have thought, on the Sunday.
No, he didn't. And as you say, he did come out with some fighting words before the event saying that he was out to win. And I'm sure he's disappointed with his performance. They had a good test in Tasmania leading up to the rally and he was really happy with the setup of the car, but that just didn't work for the conditions in Canberra when they got there. And I guess the conditions for the media day or the shakedown test on Thursday morning were totally different to what they experienced in the rally. And yeah, clearly they had some issues on the first loop of stages. I think Eddie was quicker on the second pass of those stages in the afternoon, but they've got some work to do. But I think it won't take long and he'll be back on the pace and up near the front runner again.
In recent times in the Australian Rally Championship, we haven't seen much wet weather running. I know the weekend was wet weather clearly, but when Eddie's had that car, he hasn't had all that much time when it's been slippery and muddy. And it's an all new thing when you're trying to learn a car in the dry versus in the wet. You've got different setups. You've got different characteristics as the way the car behaves on the slippery gravel. The same thing has to be said for Alex Rulo, but he maybe had a better way of adapting to that and a better base of understanding of the car because he's had some more time in it to get faster times in the wet weather.
Yeah, and I think too, the thing we haven't considered in all of this is the new tyre that this year the ARC is running the MRF control tyre rather than the Uzi that they've run for the last 3 or 4 years. So guys are going to take varying amounts of time to get used to that tyre in certain conditions. And the MRF tyre might have been great in the testing on the Skodas in the dry conditions, but put them in the wet, maybe it's a totally different ballpark.
there's a lot more storylines to play out as the season progresses, that's for sure. Molly Taylor was one who totally dominated the production cup class. She was, as expected, you would think, she was on the top step. She's the best driver in the production cup field with the best car. It doesn't take away from her performance, though, I don't think. She was solid all day.
She was, and yeah, as you said, that car is certainly far better packaged than any of the other cars in the production cup, and certainly a lot newer. And her team is much better financed than some of the other teams. But yeah, you've still got to put the runs on the board on the day. And she drove beautifully, apart from tearing a rear bumper off late in the day. But I think it was a good day and a good start to the year for Molly.
I'm sure Molly would like to step up into the outright class. And she teased something on the ARC television coverage. I believe it was on the Friday that she did look at moving up into the outright class. But she's got to be looking higher, I believe, when it comes to her results. She's going to be the class of the production cup field throughout the season, regardless of who's there, I think. And she's got to be looking high. Is there a podium on the cards? Can she get into the top five or move sort of higher up in those podium places to get great results? Do you think it's possible, even in that car that is a little bit older now and clearly isn't up to the spec of a Rally 2 car?
I think it would be a long stretch for Molly to be targeting a podium finish this year. There's now so many good cars at the top of the ARC in terms of the Rally 2 and R5 cars. But, I mean, her goal for the year is clearly the Production Cup, and she did say on Sunday morning that she's only scheduled to do four events of this year's championship. And when you take one day out of the Rally of Canberra for the wet weather, that does make it a bit more difficult if you do have some problems in Production Cup. So, I think that's clearly her focus. Yeah, she wants to finish as high as possible in the outright standings, but I think Molly knows better than anybody else that that's probably going to be unlikely.
That's the same thing that our guest on this week's podcast, Aidan Peterson, explained to me, that if he's planning on competing in the Production Cup throughout the whole season, he's lost a heap of points. He had a good weekend this weekend in the Production Cup. He finished third, but then again, that's only about 30-odd points to his Production Cup championship bid. So ebbs and it flows in the way that things work for a cup driver, and it's luck a lot of the time, isn't it? Because, yeah, we can't control the weather, we can't control the conditions in front of you, and it's the sport in many ways.
It is, and I think that's what makes the decision to cancel Saturday's running so much harder for those competitors in the Production Cup or those competitors on reduced programs for the season who can't afford or aren't able to do the full six rounds. So getting back to that rain issue at the start of the podcast, I guess that's another factor that needs to be considered. But, yeah, there's so many moving parts to all that it makes it difficult.
There sure is. Peter, as we mentioned at the start of the podcast, you're in Dunedin for the Otago Rally. You've got some news to tell about an international star who's crashed at testing. We'll have an article on our website, rallysportmag.com, before the podcast goes live. But Gaurav Gill had a crash. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Gaurav Gill's running Hayden Padden's Rally 2, Hyundai i20. It's the car that Hayden ran Rally New Zealand in a couple of years ago. It's the car that he won the New Zealand Championship in last year. Gaurav had done three runs in the morning at the shakedown test. They've gone back and they've made some changes to the rear suspension to try and get the car a little less taily. But on the corner that we were on, he'd come down a long straight, missed the apex, got into the loose gravel and went off quite heavily. He's hit the rear suspension and the front suspension on a rock and a tree stump, threw the car way up in the air, nearly went over actually, and landed quite a lot of damage to the right-hand side of the car. So the Padden team have got some work to do to try and get that car, if not back out this afternoon for some further testing, but certainly for the rally start on Saturday.
That's quite a setback for him because he's had no time in that Hyundai. He's never driven a Hyundai Rally 2 car. From what you gathered at the test, Peter, did you think that they were confident of getting it repaired in time for the rally start on Saturday morning?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, they'll have the parts to fix. I think the suspension, no dramas at all. And I mean, there was a dint in the door, and but apart from that, I think it was really only suspension damage. It's just a setback for Gill in terms of not getting a lot of testing in the car before heading out onto the stages on Saturday morning. But I think he'll be fast regardless. I mean, he's got a proven track record as a three-time Asia Pacific champion, a seven-time Indian champion. So I think he's certainly going to be one of the men to watch.
Someone else who was fast, although in a different class of car, was Irishman Chris Meek. You're telling me he looks very, very quick and rapid on the test stage. What did you make of his test? And you spoke to him as well.
I did speak to Chris before he got in the car. And look, he was really looking forward to getting out there. One of the things that Chris did say was all the stages are only done once here, whereas in WRC type events, they're all run twice. So you've got to have your pace notes 100% right from the start. He was looking forward to just jumping back into the Escort and having an old school rally, I guess. He did the Roger Albert Clark rally in the UK in November and was leading that before an engine blew. And he's, really looking forward to it. And look, the first corner we saw Chris on this morning, who came around in typical Escort pose with the back of the car squatting down, the front wheel about 6 inches off the ground. And he looked really on it from the start. So exciting to see what he can produce this weekend.
Here's Chris Meek talking before the test today at the Otago Rally.
Chris, welcome to New Zealand. The first time down here.
Well, not my first time. I was here 21 or 22 years ago to spectate on Rally New Zealand.
Okay.
2003, I think it was. So I actually took a week out to visit the South Island there, and I got the length of Queenstown, but never this far south. So, but no, I never got the chance to drive the rally. I never got the chance to drive New Zealand roads, and it was never in the championship when I was part of the World Championship. So, happy to have an opportunity to come here and experience it, for sure.
And obviously you've heard quite a lot about the Otago Rally beforehand.
Yeah, for sure. It's iconic. And even when you look at the names that have come and driven this Escort, there's certainly been a few legends been here before me, So, I'm just excited to get out and see the roads. It gives a bit of Irish weather coming in the next couple of days.
There is.
And we'll see how that affects the roads. But I think the roads here are in that good a condition. It shouldn't Correct. Harm them too much. And if the sun comes out after that, it might be actually good, let's see. Look, like I say, I'm just really eager to get out and get going.
Yeah, and you had recent experience in a BDA Escort back at the RAC rally, although that didn't last that long.
We only got six stages, I think. We were leading it by a couple of seconds. It was fairly close in the first day. Everybody was going hammer and tong at it. But, unfortunately, we had a few engine issues then. This rally in these cars gives you that raw feeling, everyone enjoys it, especially to drive it on roads like this is going to be something special for sure.
Yeah, and you've had recent experience, obviously, behind the wheel. You're doing well in Portugal this year, so...
Still keeping my hand in. I've been testing a lot with Skoda over the last few years, and then, I still do test work with them, and then I'm doing the Hyundai Portugal gig, so I still get regular seat time, still enjoy my driving, now's the time of life just to do it all with a smile on your face.
It is. Peter, there's also rain coming tomorrow in Dunedin. Is that going to make an effect on the roads and the way that the rally might be run?
It's hard to know. I drove quite a few of the stages yesterday on our pre-event recce, and the stages are incredibly quick this year. They're all Shire Road stages in farmland. They are fast and wide and smooth. The rain will have an effect for sure. I think they're expecting 20 to 30 mils of rain in Dunedin over the next couple of days. But the west coast of the country is, they're going to get sort of biblical rain over the next 48 hours. It's going to be quite incredible on the west coast. But fortunately, hopefully not coming to Dunedin.
What can you tell me about the other entrants in the rally, Peter? We know there's quite a number of Aussies. Tristan Carrigan is competing in the classics. Richie Dalton's there as well. What can you tell us about the entry list and who should people look out for across the weekend?
Yeah, look, there's 117 cars in the field, so it's going to be a fantastic event. It's the first round of the New Zealand Rally Championship, so that's always a key part of their season. Ben Hunt is probably the favourite for that in Skoda Fabia, but local Emma Gilmore, she'll be very quick in her Citroen. So it's going to be a competitive field, and I guess what a lot of the Aussies come over to the Otago Rally for is the classics. To see your Chris Meeks and your Dean Buellis and those sort of guys in Escorts, it's pretty much Escort heaven over here for those who are keen on those cars, and it'll be a pretty good rally to watch.
Definitely, it always is. Peter, thanks for taking some time out of your busy Wednesday. We know you've got to get back to the shakedown stage and take some more photos, get some more information on the event as it gets closer and closer, and we look forward to hearing all about the Otago Rally next week on the podcast. Thanks for your time.
Good on you, Luke. Look forward to it.
Welcome to the Special Stage Rally Podcast, Aidan Peterson. Aidan's fresh off a third in the Production Cup at the Rally of Canberra. How's it going, Aidan?
Good. Less wet now.
Yes, it was a very wet Canberra weekend, that's for sure. We had all of Heat 1 cancelled, as we've spoken about in the podcast previously. Sunday was a good day. You stepped up to the Subaru after some time in a Daihatsu Charade. Many years developing and learning in a front-wheel drive car, to step up to a four-wheel drive car and get a good result to start was a great effort. First of all, where did you get the Subaru from? Because as we know, as we've learned over the past little while, it's part of a bigger project. Where did you get it, first of all?
So it came from Canberra. It was owned by Doug Wright. He's had it the last 10 years or so. He got that car out of New Zealand. I don't know the history that well of it in New Zealand, other than it's been a rally car since it came out of the factory pretty much in 2001. So it's done a lot of work. It's pretty tired. It needed a fair bit of TLC when we got it. It's a good way to learn the ins and outs of everything, especially if you're rebuilding engines about 5 kilometres after driving it. But no, it's good. It's different. I'm very different to drive compared to what I'm used to. So it was a big learning curve going into Canberra, especially in the wet and, yeah, trying to learn how to drive a four-wheel drive turbo car that weighs 1,500 kilos instead of a two-wheel drive that weighs about 850, 900 kilos.
It's a bit different to the Charade that you've driven in the past. That one has a great engine and it sings through the forest. Many people will be aware of the sound and they would have seen videos of that car over the past few seasons. That's still for sale, is that right?
It is, yeah. It's just sitting there at the moment. It's ready to go do events, but got a bit of a bigger project I want to work on, which is part of the reason for buying Subaru. Just need to sell the Charade. I've got a few funds to actually get it underway.
Before we talk about the event itself in Canberra, we'll go to the bigger reason why you've got the Subaru. A G4 Suzuki Swift is being built in Tasmania. Work's been done to totally strip out a blue Suzuki Swift, the colour it is at the minute.
Yeah, it won't stay blue.
Won't stay blue. Where's the location of the car and its long build process?
It's at the very start at the moment. So we're using a Subaru platform under a Suzuki Swift, as you've said. We've got the bodywork for it now. So my whole process with it is I've actually been using 3D scanning technology and a few different CAD programs to model it all up, because we're pretty keen to try and do it right the first time. At the moment, it's very much in the figuring out where everything fits stage, but it's looking pretty promising.
So you and your father, Lee, have done most of the work on it so far, and you say you're learning on the go with things like 3D technology and whatnot. Why are you doing it that way rather than, I guess, taking it to someone else? One, cost would be a big factor in why you guys are doing it yourself. Ease of maintenance, ease of replacement parts, is that so?
Yeah, at the end of the day, we looked at a lot of different platforms, a lot of different donor cars, and we had like even a spreadsheet going with all the different lengths and weights and wheelbases. And plus, I'm fairly familiar with Subarus. I've been around them for a while and I've done a bit of tuning work on a fair few mates' cars. And yeah, so that sort of all made sense. And it all fits quite nicely under the Suzuki, so picked one up cheap at auction that had had a light impact and, yeah, thought we might as well give it a crack. It's going to be a cheap way of building a lightweight, four-wheel drive turbo car, basically.
And hopefully it'll be fast once it hits the stages, and I'm sure there'll be development work as it goes through its lifetime. Many more people are building those G4 cars. We've seen Adrian Stratford in Victoria build one into a Ford Fiesta. Mick Patton's built one himself in the Australian Capital Territory. There's AP4 cars that are being built by Racetalk, so there's more and more of these cars that are being built. Do you see as that being the way it will go in terms of the way people can build a good car on a budget and try and compete at the top level of state championships and the Australian Championship?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, at the end of the day, you're never going to build a Rally 2 car in your shed. You've got to be realistic about that fact. But building something that is going to be rapid, quite fast and quite simple. I mean, you've only got to look at one of the first G4 cars, the one that Quinny ran last couple of years. That was very competitive and it's one of the more basic ones. I think the G4 thing got blown a little out of the water there for a bit. There was quite a few very high-end build ones. and it's sort of, people didn't realise that you could actually do one quite cheap, and it's good to see people like Stratford coming through and doing these more simple, you wouldn't call them backyard, but they're home builds that are very competitive, and yeah, once they've sort of got the development into them, actually quite a reliable package that's, yeah, very cost effective to run.
Speaking of cost effectiveness, I know you're very early into the process of building it, but do you have a figure in your mind that you might be able to build it to? As we know with all builds, it could blow out, it could, most of all, they probably do blow out, but what sort of figure are you looking at, and how can you build a car that's competitive for a budget?
I guess we haven't really put a figure on it because it really is how long's a piece of string. Like, you could build a $200,000 PRC car if you wanted to, and it's the same with a G4 car. It's just all the bits you throw at it. But realistically, in the process of actually making it move, that shouldn't be any more than building a car from, like, if you're getting a cage made and, yeah, seat mounts, yeah, seam welded, things like that, it's roughly the same cost if you're getting someone else to do that. Mm-hmm. There is going to always be a little bit more engineering in it being something slightly different, but if you have access to people that are handy with fabrication or you can do it yourself, it makes all the small bits and pieces a lot easier and a lot more achievable. Whereas, yeah, getting someone to do it from scratch is quite a, yeah, costly task. So, yeah, there's no point putting a figure on it because who knows what it'll end up as. But, yeah, trying to do it properly but to a budget.
It's a car that hopefully we'll see by the end of the year, but we'll soon know as things progress. Our website, rallysportmag.com, will have all the updates as you can progress on the build for sure. The Rally of Canberra, it was the first time in a four-wheel drive car, as we've noted, in the Australian Rally Championship. Recce was dry. The test was dry for most competitors. But come Friday afternoon, Friday evening, the rain came. We lost all of Saturday's action. Were you surprised by the decision? Did you think that we could have run?
Yes, surprised and a bit disappointed. At the end of the day, I don't think anywhere in Australia you'd call 60 mil of rain an extreme weather event, even middle of the desert. Yeah, those roads, the tippy middle roads, I'll be honest, we were one of the competitors that went out there that afternoon after cancellation and thought, well, got nothing better to do, we'll go actually have a look and see what the road condition's like. And I've since seen Chris Atkinson's comments as the safety delegate. And, yeah, couldn't agree more with them. We have similar kind of roads in the northeast of Tassie, these dolerite, well, it's in dolerite country. It's all sort of a quartzy sand on clay surface, and it drains so well. The water just disappears off it. The roads were actually really good, and we were genuinely surprised, a bit disappointed. We were out there probably an hour before the first car was due to leave service.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know, it is what it is. The organisers made their call based on the information they had. Can't blame them for that at all. It's just, as a competitor that's, yeah, trying to get back into it after a bit of a break. As a lot of people know, we haven't had the best finishing record, and when we have finished, there's always been something else that's just not quite gone right, and then gone down the Subaru route trying to do something reliable and finish events, we show up and it doesn't even happen. So, yeah, a little bit disappointing, but it was good to still get some kilometres in on Sunday and, yeah, in what was slippery of roads, so I still don't understand that.
Yeah. Once we did get into action on the Sunday, the car was reliable, you were driving well, and third in production cup was the result of the day's efforts. There were six stages, about 70 competitive kilometres, and a whole lot of learning for many people. The wet conditions are always hard, and harder even when you're learning a new car. What was that like from the first stage? Did you think that you'd have grip? Did you think there'd be low grip? How was the approach for you and Mitch inside the car?
I was a bit ambitious to say we're driving well. I reckon that first stage is probably the worst stage I've driven in a long time. I was all over the place. I think I cleaned up half the forest with the front of the car and the other half with the rear. So, yeah, getting a big car stopped in conditions like that's a bit different to a lightweight car. I even managed to pull the wrong handbrake at one point. That was just learning thing again. Yeah, it was an interesting first couple of stages, particularly because the grip was very unpredictable. A lot of braking in particular, it would look slippery and go, oh, I'll get on it early, pull it up, and it would pull up fine. You go, oh, righto. Then you go into the next corner that looked fine and you just sail off into the bushes. So, yeah, it was a tricky one, and yeah, a couple of half spins and bit of lawn mowing, and we made it to the finish, but probably not the best performance.
Yeah, it's not easy to pick grip in the wet in a rally. When you're on tarmac, it's hard. When you're on gravel, it's possibly even harder. Comparing the Charade to the Subaru in those conditions makes it hard as well, because they're two completely different cars to be able to drive. From the experience, and particularly when it dried out in the afternoon loop, how were you driving the Subaru versus driving the Charade? For people that aren't aware, the Charade's a front-wheel drive car, very light car. It's got good power compared to a four-wheel drive Subaru. How were you driving the two differently?
It's a whole different approach in terms of particularly line and braking, and also going back from a sequential gearbox back to a synchro H pattern, and yeah, fishing around for gears in there, sometimes a bit of a challenge under brakes. But yeah, it's a lot more, you're turning in a lot earlier in a four-wheel drive turbo car and setting the car up quite differently. It's all about getting the drive it through and out of the corner rather than just maintaining as much speed as possible, and very different feeling in the cars too. Like, obviously the response is completely different with the weight of the cars.
Yeah.
And like the Subaru, we have no idea on the setup at this stage. We just started everything from a base point and diffs just from a rough idea of what might work, and yeah, it was pretty diabolical to start with, but changed a couple of little things in between stages, as well as screwed my head back on, and by the end of that Sunday loop, I was reasonably happy with how we were doing, how the car was behaving, and was able to sort of throw a bit of commitment at it, and yeah, starting to feel, well, sort of starting to understand why these things work like they do. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. And there's a state round not too far away in Tasmania. Is your name on the entry list?
Yeah, we've got Helier Rally on the 27th of April. Very keen for that one. Car's still going, so yeah, we'll get it out for that one. That's an event I'm quite familiar with, and that's actually, those roads are quite likely going to be very similar to what's in the ARC at the end of the year. So, yeah, be a good little bit of learning that one.
Absolutely. As this weekend rolls around, there's more national championship events across the ditch. The Otago Rally will run this weekend. So we've gone, as usual, the first round of the Australian Rally Championship, followed by the first round of the New Zealand Rally Championship. Will you follow that one? And have you been to the Otago Rally before?
Yeah, I'll follow along, see what happens. I haven't been. I haven't been to New Zealand since I was probably about 5 years old. I'd love to go again, love to go and have a look or compete even in an event like that. It's a cool event. It looks amazing. The scenery is amazing. Some of the driver lineup's pretty cool too. So,
yeah. Guys like Chris Meek in a classic Ford Escort, Brandon Semenuk in a H6 Subaru. There's lots of people there to talk about and to follow along with. The Otago Rally runs this weekend on Saturday and Sunday. Aidan, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate you joining us on the podcast. Well done at the weekend, and let's hope the season keeps going as you hope, and the G4 car is progressing as well. So thanks again.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Mozzie here. I don't have much experience when it comes to rallying, but Walkinshaw Racing Services does, and they're available now for your rally needs. They can help you with engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication. No job is too big or too small. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop, and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. And you don't need to be an Aussie champion or factory back to be able to. From club to state to national level competitors and car owners, let Walkinshaw Racing Services help you with your rally needs. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services@walkinshawracing.com.au.